Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Englander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that spent the 4th of July weekend mostly indoors, avoiding the crowds that we traditionally mingle with. That doesn't mean, however, that we didn't think of American history. We were reminded of our country's story, the good, the bad, and the ugly, by signing up for the streaming service Disney Plus, which gave us access to Lin-Manuel Miranda's Tony Award-winning musical Hamilton, based ever so loosely on the life of the founding father, Alexander Hamilton. U.S. history is also one of the main themes of the documentary John Lewis Good Trouble, which tells the story of the longtime U.S. representative from Georgia. Finally, we learned a few things about the late comic actor Peter Sellers through Peter Medak's documentary, The Ghost of Peter Sellers. Let's begin with a look at one of the most prominent of all the founding fathers. I'm referring, of course, to Alexander Hamilton, the immigrant. He was born not in the continental U.S., but on an island in the Caribbean West Indies, who went on to become one of the chief proponents of the U.S. Constitution and the nation's first Secretary of the Treasury under George Washington. Who Hamilton was, in fact, though, is less important to fans of Lin-Manuel Miranda's musical Hamilton than how Miranda chooses to portray him. Famously casting his production, which won 11 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, with mostly Black and Latinx actors, singers, and dancers, and writing both the book and song lyrics in hip-hop rhyming patterns, Miranda manages to blend actual history with magically realistic overtones to concoct, according to the show's producers, a rousing version of America then as told by America now. This movie version is actually a hybrid production, being a blend of a filmed actual show shot over three nights in 2016 and featuring the original cast, interspersed with specially performed sequences shot more intimately. The result may not have quite the impact of a live performance. What movie ever does match that of live theater? But Miranda's music has enough traditional Broadway power, and his cast, especially the talented Leslie Odom Jr. as Aaron Burr and Renee Elise Goldsberry as Angelica Schuyler, proves energetic enough to make this film version of Hamilton a stunning success.
So this might shock you, but watching this movie over the weekend was the first time I've experienced Hamilton at all. The show in its entirety, but even the music, I've sort of actively been avoiding it for the last 5 or 6 years. Part of that is because I wanted to experience it for the first time in a live setting with actors and an audience. And part of it is also because I had so many friends that would say things like, I don't even like musicals, but I like Hamilton. And that just makes me automatically suspicious of it. And so now that I've seen the Disney film version of Hamilton, I'm not totally sure if this was indeed the way to be introduced to the show. But, you know, I think that's just kind of the built-in limitations of the concert film, because I mean, I think even the good ones don't adequately capture the electricity of a live performance. I mean, I think maybe the only concert film that both makes you feel like you're in the front row of the audience, but also on the stage with the performers, is Jonathan Demme's Talking Heads film, Stop Making Sense.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And
I think that, you know, the Hamilton film, it does a pretty good job of showing us these great actors and singers, because I think that's the real selling point here, as if you were in the front row of the stage. So the cameras are mostly kind of fixed stage left and stage right and sort of down near the orchestra. And then they occasionally will go into medium shots of the actors, as you said, when there are more intimate moments. And then there are a couple of parts where the cameras are actually on the stage, kind of swirling around the actors, that was clearly shot without an audience there. And that, to me, is when the movie really came alive, because it differentiates it from just a very polished kind of film document of a live show. I understand that it was probably really difficult to patch this all together, but I almost wanted more of that, more of being on the stage with the actors as they were going through this complicated choreography, because the setup of the stage itself has this revolving wheel on it. It's kind of this minimalist design, and the way that they utilize that wheel at different parts was really cool to see. I also liked being able to turn the subtitles on, because I think my favorite thing about Hamilton is the wordplay and just Miranda's lyrics, his sense of meter and rhyme scheme. It's constantly surprising you. And when you go to see a Broadway show or a touring Broadway show, depending on where you're sitting in the theater or, you know, just the sound mix of the venue, you don't always hear every word as the actors say them. So I thought that was an added benefit here, being able to read along as the actors were singing, because this is a mostly sung through show. So I think that if you already love Hamilton, you're really going to love revisiting the play whenever you want now. I mean, that's why the cast recording album was such a huge success. But if you don't know the show at all, you'll probably still like it and appreciate it. But I still think that this was a piece of art that was designed to be seen on a stage. And I hope next year, when it's supposedly coming to Spokane, I'll get the chance to see it that way as it was intended.
Nathan, I think you bring up a good point about Hamilton. So it's sort of like, what is the appropriate sequencing? Mm-hmm. I mean, not everyone had the opportunity to see it performed live. And we did see the touring company in Seattle. But we, prior to that, had not listened to the music other than in passing. And so we went pretty much and immersed ourselves in that theater experience first, then listened to the album, then listened to our grandchildren sing all the songs repeatedly over and over and over, because I think they have them memorized. And now we have the film. And of course, it is interesting in this film portrayal, you know, of the live production, that you can see how some of the, you know, the actions that are taken on stage would have played out differently than when you're there looking at it being filmed, where they're almost in some places, of course, over the top, because that's how theatrical productions are staged. I think the one true benefit I thought of the movie compared to the other presentations was the fact that the performances here, which come through on the album, are just heightened by the visual of seeing these people at the same time, because there are some people who are talented beyond belief in this particular production.
Everyone is talented beyond belief.
Yes, yes. I think that would be fair enough to say.
And you know, the one thing we want to point out is that when we saw it, we have to talk about our experience. We were in nosebleed country. We were way up in the balcony of the Paramount Theater. So it was for us. And it took me until after the intermission to fully connect with what he was trying to do. So seeing the movie for us was an amazing experience, because it was like everything that I missed in the live performance was there. And when we didn't even have the benefit of, or we didn't take advantage of the subtitles, which may I watch it again and put on the subtitles. I think that's really a good suggestion. Nathan.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that the, you know, the technical qualities of Hamilton are sort of impossible to argue with. They're great. And I think, you know, you mentioned Leslie Odom Jr., but I think, you know, Daveed Diggs is great in this as well. A Tony Award winning performance.
He plays Lafayette.
And Thomas Jefferson.
And Thomas Jefferson, yeah. Yes.
I kind of want to talk a little bit about the actual content of Hamilton, because I think since this has gone on Disney Plus and has become you know, more accessible to wider audiences, there have been some criticisms that have been dredged up again that were written back when the show was at its peak and are kind of coming forward. So this show wasn't quite the deconstruction of the Founding Father myth that I expected. And Lin-Manuel Miranda has been accused of, and I mean, perhaps not incorrectly, sort of hiding behind this concept of colorblind casting while simultaneously wallpapering over the really evil things that some of these characters did. But I do think that it shows them, particularly Hamilton, to be complicated human beings and not just these kind of, you know, monuments that we think of, that these people that made a lot of mistakes in their personal lives and their careers while they were setting up this very flawed system of democracy that had to be amended over and over again. So I see where the criticisms are coming from, and I don't disagree with them necessarily, but I do think that the characters come through as human in this, which is something that a lot of historical fiction or, you know, narrative interpretations of history don't always get to.
That is an intriguing notion that, you know, what is the underlying purpose? And I do think it is another means of introducing people to stories that we've told. And as we know, one of the songs focuses on what's your legacy going to be? Who's going to tell your story? And we know that we haven't always told these stories correctly. And so I guess,
I guess
I view this as a starting point, a jumping off point for discussions, especially maybe with kids. You know, there's a new something that I become familiar with, a young people's introduction to the Howard Zinn History of America and so forth. So a new version of that. And so I think this is another opportunity to have this dialogue.
And I think Lin-Manuel Miranda would be the first person to agree with you, Nathan, because he's been open about the criticism and saying, expressing how difficult it was to do this and to try to squeeze everything into a 2-hour running time. So that was Hamilton, which is available on Disney Plus. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at a pair of biographical documentaries, John Lewis, Good Trouble, and The Ghost of Peter Sellers. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. We're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the Disney Plus production of the stage musical Hamilton. Let's now move to a couple of documentaries, each of which focuses on a particular individual. First up is John Lewis, Good Trouble, an homage to the one-time civil rights activist and longtime U.S. representative from Georgia. Then, with The Ghost of Peter Sellers, Hungarian-born filmmaker Peter Medak will tell his story of how the late British comic actor Peter Sellers helped ruin the ill-fitted 1973 pirate movie titled Ghost in the Noonday Sun. Let's begin with a look at a man who has devoted his life to the struggle for racial equality. Somewhere during Don Porter's 96-minute documentary film, John Lewis, Good Trouble, Georgia Congressman John Lewis defines what he means by good trouble, as he explained in a May 29th commencement speech to the graduates of Maine's Bates College. Good trouble is the moral obligation, mission, and mandate the students have when they leave to go out and seek justice for all. In her biographical study of Lewis, filmmaker Porter gives an up-close and personal look at the man, from his humble beginnings as one of 10 children born to Alabama sharecroppers, through his quest to get an education, his years as a civil rights activist, including his stints as one of the original Freedom Riders, and his 3-year chairmanship of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and his 17-term tenure as a U.S. representative from Georgia's 5th Congressional District. Porter doesn't take any risks, and her film plays out more as an adoring fan letter to Lewis than as a frank look at the man. That said, few politicians living today deserve more adoration than this man of such courage and commitment.
And I think the more we can learn about history and about what happened during this particular period in the civil rights movement, the better. And the thing that I appreciated about this film was it shows him now at, what, age 85?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Still being an activist and campaigning for other candidates for office. And so I liked that sort of bringing it to the fore, because we're talking about, you know, elections in 2016 and 2018. And he's out there, you know, as this iconic figure of the movement. I think my maybe only criticism is the fact that I know that the focus was on John Lewis and not on Julian Bond, for example, but that their sort of falling out with one another was addressed, but not really dealt with. And I think the two men are a contrast to one another in so many ways. And it shows, you know, how diverse the movement was. And so I think I would have appreciated a little bit, maybe more of that.
I would have appreciated a whole documentary built around the differences between these two guys, but that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, that's a different story, and maybe that will be told at some point. But I think the archival footage, hearing him tell about his own experiences at Selma, and I think the way she put it together, you know, was fine craftsmanship, not anything particularly out of the ordinary to my way of thinking, but I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah, I mean, I think like RBG before it, Good Trouble is this, you know, pretty cuddly portrait of a figure in, you know, political history. I mean, this has footage of John Lewis dancing to Pharrell and playing with his cats, just to remind you that, you know, he's just such a sweet guy. And he does seem like a sweet guy. But I agree with you that I think a lot of important things are shortchanged here. The Julian Bond thing was a huge one for me, because yeah. I want the Lewis v. Bond film. I mean, just to give you a little background, if you don't know, they were longtime friends and they ran against each other as presumptive Democratic nominees for the position that Lewis has held since 1986. And Lewis used these sort of underhanded tactics in eventually defeating Bond, and it completely ruined their relationship for the rest of Bond's life, at least. And the movie just kind of passes over it. Same thing with his wife, Lillian Miles. They say multiple times in this film that, you know, he relied so heavily on her, but she's basically just a footnote. So I think there are things in this film that could have been expounded upon. But I agree. I mean, he's a great man. There's no denying it. And I think anybody that isn't aware of Lewis and the legacy that is still going, I think a better biography could still be made, but this would be good like in a class or something as an educational tool. So it's good on that front. And you're right, the archival footage is amazing. And some of it, they actually just project and screen to Lewis himself. So you get to watch him watch his own history. And that's a really effective technique in this movie.
Yeah, it meant something particularly to Mary Pat and me, because we, in April, we drove down to Montgomery and Birmingham. And so we saw a lot of these sites, the Freedom Writers Museum. And that said, bringing history into reality for us, that said, boy, I sure, we've all three talked about it, that Bond-Lewis fight over that congressional seat, that deserves a whole movie in and of itself.
Think of the FX miniseries they could make out of that. Like
oh, yeah.
A six-part thing about it. It's yeah. Such a good story, right for the telling.
And many of these people are still alive, so, you know, we mm-hmm. can get the inside stuff. Anyway, that was John Lewis' Good Trouble. Let's close with The Ghost of Peter Sellers. The title of Peter Medak's film has at least a couple of meanings. One refers to the 1973 film that Medak attempted to make from the Sid Fleischman novel Ghost in the Noonday Sun. Another refers to Sellers himself, the talented but emotionally insecure comic actor whose brilliance in a number of roles, such as those featuring the original Inspector Clouseau, was matched by the difficulties he posed both for film directors and his fellow cast members. The Ghost of Peter Sellers is basically an opportunity for Hungarian-born director Medak to explain his part in the what turned out to be disastrous film project that saw Sellers fighting with everyone from Medak and his producers to his co-stars, mainly the American actor Tony Franciosa. Much of the film feels like a therapy session, with the 83-year-old Medak being consoled by people who were there and who knew what had happened. And the rest is a study in how a label of genius sometimes gives those endowed with it a sense of narcissistic self-regard that borders on the criminal.
Well, I enjoy a good documentary about either movies that never got made or had, you know, tumultuous productions. I'm thinking of Hearts of Darkness about Apocalypse Now, or Jodorowsky's Dune, or Lost in La Mancha with Terry Gilliam. And this belongs in that group. The only difference here is that it's like Jodorowsky's Dune. It's a filmmaker looking back on a troubled production. Ghost in the Noonday Sun was completed and released in a very limited capacity. I don't think in America, however, and you can find it out there floating around on the internet, I think, and it's supposed to be released on a home video for the first time, I think, sometime this year. And I can't wait to see it after having seen this. But I think
one of the worst movies ever made.
Well, now I really want to see it. But I like that title, The Ghost of Peter Sellers, because I think it's a fitting one, because this is really a film about how artists are haunted by projects that didn't go the way that they had planned. And there's sort of some this kind of convenient parallelism going on with the actual content of the movie that's being filmed and Medak's own reflection here, because the whole movie is set at sea. And there's also this sort of Moby Dick, Great White Whale element of, you know, chasing down this project that may not be.
The whole production was at sea, literally.
Yes, and that too. Yes. So yeah, I like that, you know, you do kind of find out that they sort of patch things up. The two Peters sort of patch things up later in life. And so there's kind of a bittersweet little coda to this story. But yeah, if you like those sorts of disastrous movie-making tales, this is a good one.
Yeah, I think it was perhaps a little bit too confessional for me, because, you know, the director's trying to make sense of what happened. And clearly he knows he was the director. He was supposed to have control of these things. He was never going to have control of the elements.
They never had a script.
Right. I mean, so, yeah. And I think that he was hoping that just Peter Sellers' presence would be enough. And I'm not sure that he appreciated fully this sort of issues that Peter Sellers was dealing with. And I think one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie is that at one point, Peter Sellers fakes a heart attack and leaves the production. And then they're just supposed to come back and start again and so forth. And it is a behind the scenes look. I think it could have been edited a little bit, but I always appreciate, Nathan, as do you, documentaries about films and about filmmaking and about production.
And I have to say, my favorite part is when they sail this boat the first time into the harbor and the Greek captain is drunk and it sinks because he runs up against the rock.
It sinks on the first day of filming, which is an omen if I ever heard of one.
Yeah, no kidding. And that was The Ghost of Peter Sellers. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the stage musical brought to the big screen, Hamilton, and the documentary, John Lewis, Good Trouble. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you, too, our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again explore the world of streaming cinema. Until then, remember these words from Representative John Lewis. Fury spends itself pretty quickly when there's no fury facing it. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.